White Rocket Entertainment.
I'm Brendan Marcello, Auburn beat reporter, and you're listening to the AU Wishbone.
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
Welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. And now by Audible.com and by the book tour for Ken Ringer's Lorindo. I'm Van Allen Plexico. I'm back, and I'm joined, who also is back, by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we've had technical delays out the wazoo. I didn't imagine... Our technical delays have had technical delays, but we've got it back up and running, at least a rudimentary recording system. My theory is that when they updated Skype the most recent time, they've done something to where it works different, and so the audio recording software is being routed somehow differently, because I use a virtual mixing board, and it's not sending the sounds other than me and you to the recorder. And then when I tried to fix that, I messed everything up. So I've now got this is about the seventh different audio recording software. Hopefully it's actually working. The bad news is that means my famous sound effects board no longer works at all. But the good news is I still have my iPad, to which most of our listeners say,
"Oh my God!"
Yeah, we're going back to the Stone Age, but we've got a few, none of my new ones, none of my fun ones, but we've still got a few sound effects.
You cannot be serious, man. You cannot be serious.
I have a few. I have a very few, so... So we've got several things to cover tonight, and let's go ahead and get on into it. First up, though, I have to apologize. I sound terrible, and I feel worse. Here's what happened to me. Let me just tell our listeners real quickly, and you, because you don't know either. Here's what happened to me yesterday. My wife and I went over to a house of some people we didn't know, because a friend of my wife is running for office in Illinois, and so she was having a little coffee, you know, meeting thing just to talk about issues. And we'd never been to these people's house. So we went in there and we were sitting there on the sofa with a whole bunch of other people in the chairs and everything listening to her. And all of a sudden, within about 10 minutes of me sitting there, it became very, very apparent to me that the people that owned that house also owned a big fluffy cat. I am deathly allergic to big fluffy cats, and I can sense them instantly within about 10 minutes. And so by the time we left, I was stretched out in the seat, gasping for breath, full worst allergy attack, asthma attack combination I've had in a long time. And I was on the albuterol inhaler, like mist machine, and oh my gosh, I didn't sleep any last night. I haven't slept in 2 days. I feel a little better now, but... I think probably a bottle of tequila would be the best medicine at this point. But that's why I sound terrible. And if I have no clue what I'm talking about and I'm rambling, like right now, it's because I've been on death's door for the last 30 hours. So, but anyway, that's what's going on with me. How are you?
Better than that.
Yeah, well, good. Well, we haven't gotten to talk to the people in a couple of weeks now, so...
And we haven't really got to talk to each other very much because we were dealing with the technical stuff. So
yeah, and everything else. So, well, we are at the. You remember I said close your eyes and the season would be half over, and the season is half over and beyond. Right? I mean we were six games into our schedule a week ago, and then we played the famous Idle University this Saturday. It was so weird. This was a weird Saturday. There was no Auburn game, and there was no Formula One, and I had to go do an academic presentation in St. Louis. It did not feel like a Saturday at all. So when I finally got free and turned on the end of the Alabama game, I was like, I turned on the Alabama game and looked at the score and went, pretty much, you know. So that was just no fun at all. So if not for the Arkansas Ole Miss game, it would have been a total wash this weekend. So, but we are at the midpoint. So what are your thoughts about Auburn at this point? Let me just say one thing. I feel like Auburn fans in the space of just 2 or 3 weeks have gone from fire Gus yesterday to we're going to beat Alabama and be in Atlanta for the SEC championship.
I don't know about that. I haven't heard any of that we're going to win the SEC West talk.
You know how our people are. I love our people. They're our family, right? But they get a little carried away in both directions sometimes.
There are levels of success between, you know, absolute failure and winning the national championship. And we're on the path towards something in between there. You know, Auburn is dramatically better. And they're playing much better than we did at the beginning of the year. But also, you know, we played really tough teams at the beginning of the year and played them okay. You know, played them not bad. But since then, we played much, much better. And I think this team has shown that it has some things that are real about it, that are solid. They're not, you know, kind of fly by night kind of things. But it's interesting. Like, I think people's perception is colored a little bit by last year and by, you know, having high expectations and having a crash last year. And then also by the fact that we look so screwed up in the Clemson game that I think it's like a bad taste in the back of your mouth that people can't get it out to really enjoy what's happened the last few weeks, where Auburn has played at a very, very high level in the LSU game and the Louisiana Monroe game and last week against Mississippi State, or, you know, a week ago.
Well, I think it's what we saw in 2013. Have you noticed that Gus? I don't know if you've seen any videos from the dressing room after the game, but Gus is back to doing his "we're going up," like he's doing his hand in a sloping up motion. We're going up, right? That's the thing he did every week in 2013, and I think that's been very apparent because, you know, if you think about it, the Clemson game we showed flashes of competence, I think is a way to put it. And then the next week, I guess Arkansas State, we looked like we were trying to iron out some of our problems. And then against A&M, we were playing a much tougher team than I think we realized at the time. And then I think really starting with week four, I think with game four, it looked like we started to get our act together. That was
LSU.
LSU, right. We still weren't scoring touchdowns, though. So we were getting our act together by week four, but we still weren't scoring touchdowns. Then in week five against, I guess, Louisiana Monroe, now we start to score touchdowns. And, of course, against Mississippi State, we scored a bunch of touchdowns, at least in the first half. So it feels like every week all phases of the team have been getting better if they weren't already really good. Because, I mean, it's not like the kicking game's getting any better. But everything else is like, you know, even the defense has seemed like it's gotten a little it's made some scores, you know, it's made some turnover scores. It wasn't even doing that, even when it was playing really well early.
Well, and I think Lawson's got played better the last couple of weeks. He wasn't he was good at the beginning of the year, but he wasn't, you know, completing the play. Yeah. And he and Adams have really been on a tear the last couple of weeks. So I think the defense has gotten better.
Yeah.
I think they've kind of, as they've figured out like who they are and what works and what doesn't work. And I think the offense has clearly gotten better. Sean White has a tremendous amount of confidence right now, and he's gotten better. I mean, you can see it. He is playing much better than he did early this year or at any point last season.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the things about Gus that and his teams that he never quite seems to know what he has at the very beginning, But at least I'll say this much. Usually we figured out pretty quickly. I mean, 2014 is the big exception because we kind of knew what we had at the beginning of 2014 and it kind of spiraled down halfway through. But every other year we've kind of gone up. You know, even last year, by the last two or three games of the season, the defense was playing a lot better, closer to what it is now. And the offense was getting a little better, I guess, in some ways. So, notwithstanding Sean being hurt. So, I just feel like they feel like they're getting their grounding under, they're getting the ground under their feet, and they're starting to figure out what they can do. I hate that we had the setback with Kerryon because he was really coming into his own right around the time he got hurt.
He was, but hopefully, I mean, if it's not a big thing, and the week off came at a really good time for him, and he's going to be fine for Arkansas. So, but it allowed Pettway to have his big game in the sun, kind of. So,
well, from what I was seeing from the quotes, people were saying the coaches were saying that Kerryon, he was out there, he was catching balls, he was running around. They weren't really saying, "Oh, he looks great, he's back 100%, he's back to normal." I have a suspicion this is one of those things that may be a problem the whole rest of the season, at least until the bowl, and it's going to be nagging where he can play on it, but it's going to have to be really wrapped up, and he's not going to be able to cut and do the things that he does so well. So it just makes me nervous because we don't have a lot of depth at that position. We don't have a lot of playmakers at that position, just really him and Pettway right now. I don't want to have to depend on Stanton Truitt as 50% of the rushing attack, you know? So, I don't know. I mean, if that's the way it is, that's the way it is. We'll have to deal with it. But and at least Sean is, like you say, throwing the ball better, so we can rely more on the passing game. I mean, we've always kind of wanted to see Auburn just kind of cut loose and try being a passing team under this offense. So maybe this is the opportunity to see what happens.
Well, I think it may be headed in that direction like a year from now. I mean, I could see a situation where if Sean is still the quarterback next year and these receivers are all a year older and more experienced in the system and stuff, then the passing game could be really on a different planet then. But I'd rather – I think the team strength is more running right now, and we need to keep doing that to be successful. So.
Well, let's look at the Mississippi State game very quickly, since it was over a week ago, but we never really got a chance to talk about it. That first half, man, that's something, wasn't it?
It was, and it was interesting because Auburn came out and played really kind of cruddy the first two series or whatever, and then they kind of exploded after that.
Well, it was a tip ball was all that was. I mean, the ball was right on the hands of the receiver, so.
Tony Stevens.
Yeah, so it wasn't really Sean's fault. I mean, if Stevens had caught that, then we probably would have gone down and scored on the first drive.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, we pretty much didn't get stopped the whole rest of the half.
Well, and then they came out and missed the field goal, and that was really a big turning point.
That has to be demoralizing. You know, that's it wasn't as much as the NC State field goal on Saturday. Gosh. I wonder if that kid made it safely back to his dorm. Poor kid. But we had the big first half. Everything seemed to be really clicking. Kerryon got hurt, which was terrible, but it did give Pettway a chance to really kind of show off what he can do and just be a bulldozer. It was funny because he had over 100 yards, and he was getting like 3.5 yards a carry. It's just that he wasn't having any negative plays. He wasn't losing anything. He was just getting about 3 or 4 yards every time he touched the ball. And that was pretty much enough. I mean, that's been the main – I've been saying all along, that's been the main bugaboo all season was negative plays. And you can really trace a lot of our offensive improvement to getting rid of those plays that just were never going anywhere, that did nothing but cause us to lose yardage.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them were those slow-developing plays where Gus is three times too cute for his own good. You know what I mean?
That's right. And the quick handoff up the middle to Pettway is the opposite of that.
Right. Right. Well, I don't think I can do it. My head's all stuffed up. Here's Gus after he's had a cat allergy debilitating, okay? we're a run play action team. That's our identity. We're a play action run team. So that's what he wants us to be now. That's what he's decided that we are with Sean White. is a team that establishes the run. Once teams have to come up and start playing the run, then he wants Sean to start throwing to those receivers. I mean, that's 100% the identity that he has decided this team is going to have, is run first, establish the run with those two guys, bring up the defense, and then throw the ball, play action. That's what he wants this team to be, which is interestingly very similar to what we were back around 2002 with Petrino, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And this team can do that. And this team, Sean is really good at that, and the receivers can do that. And this team has the talent to make teams pay for that.
I wish we had a good catching tight end, though. That's the one thing right now that we're really lacking, you know, is any kind of an intermediate big threat on the receiving.
But I think Kyle Davis is that. I mean, the catches that he's been making have been kind of across the middle.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think he's going to be that guy.
Yeah. Just kind of like a big slot receiver rather than a tight end. Mm-hmm. I guess it amounts to about the same thing in a lot of cases. What do you think about Petway overall right now? We've talked about him in passing here and there all season, and we've had great nicknames for him and everything. But just kind of break him down as a running back. Who does he remind you of, and what do you think of him kind of as a running back right now?
He doesn't have the top gear. Yeah. You know, the breakaway kind of – physically, maybe he's in the same ballpark as like a James Bostic kind of. But he doesn't have the breakaway gear that Bostic had where he could go 100 right. yards on people.
Yeah.
He really can, you know, lean forward and run over people. And when he gets going and he gets in a rhythm and the offensive line gets in a rhythm – and he gets to the next level, and he's up against safeties and cornerbacks. I mean, he punishes them. And I think over the course of the game, it really matters. Like, those guys do not want to tackle him after the fifth or sixth time he's coming in their direction. So it's not a copycat thing, but it really is kind of some of the stuff that happened with Derrick Henry last year when they run him 30 times a game, where, you know, smaller players don't want to see that guy coming at him after a while. And Petway's that same way, where he doesn't shy away from contact. If you're a smaller guy and you're coming up to tackle him, he's going to make you pay for it. And he really did that against Mississippi State. And I think it kind of took their will away after a while. They couldn't, you know, stop him in the backfield. They couldn't stop him at 1 yard. It was 3 or 4 or 5 yards, and then he was running. He was, you know, decking somebody.
Yeah.
He doesn't have that. You know, he's not going to go 100 yards, but he has had a couple of long runs. And I think if teams fall asleep on him, or they're bringing everybody up close to the line of scrimmage, he can break, you know, through. Or they're playing man to man and not paying attention a little bit, he can break through and have some good, solid runs, productive runs. So I really like him. I think he's dependable. Now, he fumbled in this game, right? But some of that was, I think he had carried the ball like 25 times at that point. So that's my only concern with him is, you know, if Kerryon really is hurt, like you say, I would be concerned. I don't want him to carry the ball 39 times again. I think 30 is plenty.
Well, and kind of out of nowhere, he'd been getting like about 8 or 10 or 12 carries a game, and suddenly you turn him into Cadillac in 2001, you know, and that's not exactly. I guess the running back that kind of back always makes me think of is Rudy Johnson a little bit, though.
Mm-hmm.
Might be a little Ronnie Brown in him if he gets a little more gets a little more moves going.
He's not as big as Brandon Jacobs, you know,
but
a little bit of that, too.
A little bit of that, yeah. Yeah, and a nice compliment. Well, I mean, there's a little bit of Cadillac and Ronnie Brown. I mean, neither one of them are quite what Cadillac and Ronnie Brown were by any means, but they're both promising. But it's kind of that thunder and lightning kind of approach there that is promising.
Sure.
The defense did play really well against Mississippi State. We kept them down until late in the game. They are getting better. The secondary, I want to say somebody's coming back from injury or something. Maybe they already did. I'm maybe mistaken.
The big thing is Mississippi State was we only had to rush four guys. We did. I mean, in other games, we blitz a lot. We needed to. But we didn't need to against Mississippi State because we were playing four guys in the defensive line, and they were getting in the backfield all game long. I mean, they were making plays. Montrevious Adams was making lots of plays. Lawson was back there a lot. And so – When you don't need to blitz, it makes playing defense a lot easier.
Yeah. This was probably our – I was really hoping they would win the BYU game and make us look a little better. I hated that they lost that one. But this was really about as good of an SEC win as we've had since probably the LSU game in 2014 as far as beating somebody down.
Yes.
So that was very enjoyable. And it was even in their house. I can't remember the last time that we went and beat – I guess Tennessee in 13, right? Was the last time we went to somebody's house and beat them down good. Okay, well, now we've got the Razorbacks coming up, the little team from the little smokehouse coming in, and they're coming in to play in Jordan-Hare this year. Now, we all remember last year, the three things that stand out from last year's game was four overtimes, Sean getting hurt, and our receivers couldn't get wet if you threw them in the Pacific Ocean catching the ball.
Oh, my gosh. The third one was that killed me in that game.
Oh, yeah. We'd have won the game easily if they could have caught half the passes they dropped in the first half.
They're going to catch the passes this week. I'm just telling you.
They better.
It wasn't there some kind of like stuff between Gus and Bielema in that game, or is that the game? Am I thinking
always,
of the
there's always
wasn't there some kind of drama between them, or am I thinking about the game 2 years before that?
I can't remember because it seems like every year there's something there. He's always trying to use us as his, you know, he knows he's not going to beat Alabama, but he didn't think he's ever going to beat LSU. So how funny is it that Arkansas has like won the last three games against Ole Miss?
God, listen. The 2015 Arkansas-Ole Miss game still makes me mad, okay? Yep. It's the only reason Alabama won the SEC is because Arkansas converted on 4th-and-23 against Ole Miss. The only reason, okay? So you can all blame Brett Bielema for Saban having another SEC title. So Alabama had nothing to do with it. That was all Arkansas doing that. So
would Alabama have gone to the playoffs if they had if Ole Miss had played in the SEC championship game?
And they would have had a very difficult decision then.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been interesting. Alabama could have ended up with two of their national championships coming in years they didn't even win the SEC. Mm-hmm. How weird would that be? Crazy.
But this Arkansas team is different. They're not the same kind of team they've had the last couple of years where they were – you know, we think of Brett Bielema teams as kind of these physical, formation, pound it out. You know, run it 50 times and be very tough on the defensive line, defensive front kind of teams.
Les Miles this, Jr.
Yes. And in this team isn't like that, though. You were right in that the quarterback is much better than we thought he was going to be.
Yeah.
That Austin Allen, the younger brother of the guy who was there last year, is really good. And he's had an excellent season, but they're much more of a downfield passing finesse kind of team than a lot of the other Arkansas teams. And good teams have run the ball down their throats against TCU, A&M, Alabama, and who's the other good team they played? Those teams are averaging 7 yards a carry against Arkansas.
Wow.
So – and – that didn't matter last week because what do we know about Ole Miss?
They can't
run the football. I mean, Ole Miss got the ball back in that game. They were winning. There were like 6.5 minutes left, and they had the ball, and they called 3 pass plays. That's all you need to know. If they could run the ball, they'd have run. I mean, if it was Auburn in that situation, we'd have run the ball, and Arkansas would have never gotten it back. The game would have been over. So I think the biggest thing I'm looking forward in this game is Auburn to control the game, you know, by running and also with our defensive line because their offensive line is not that good. I mean, the other thing you saw in this game against Ole Miss is both quarterbacks were basically, you know, quarterback drops back. He looks around. There's 3 guys coming right at him, and he's falling backwards or to the side. He chucks it downfield, and either somebody catches it or somebody doesn't, and the quarterback gets knocked down. And Allen, the one thing you got to say about that guy, he's tough. I mean, I don't know if you saw the game they played against Alabama, but he got the living crap beat out of him in that game.
Yeah.
And the same thing against Ole Miss. He took a lot of shots, but he gets back up and makes plays. So, you know, they like him and respect him as a quarterback. But and they ran the ball a little better against Ole Miss than they had the last couple of weeks. But so their offense is pretty dangerous. I mean, I think it's going to be a tough challenge for our defense. I think we can do it. I mean, I don't think there's good on off near as good on offense as A&M or Clemson. But I think they're good. We're going to have to play well, especially the pass defense. We haven't, you know, it's been a couple weeks since we faced a dangerous quarterback, so they're going to have to play better. But I think, you know, in terms of our offense, we're just going to line up and kind of pound them. And then, it's, you know, do the play action stuff we've been doing and burn them with it. Actually catch the ball this time.
I think that this is why I'm so aggravated that Kerryon is hurt. How many, because he would be such a key to this game in the scenario that you just painted for us if he were totally healthy. As it is, how many plays do you think he'll even be on the field?
I mean, I'm hoping he's not as hurt as you think he is. So
I always go more. They always act like everybody's fine, and you always find out later that they were much
worse. I know. I mean, always. Well, one of the potential diagnoses I heard for him was high ankle sprain. If it's that, it is going to be like you're saying. So,
yes.
I mean, it could also be more of a bruise kind of thing. But if it is high ankle sprain, you're right. It's going to be like that. He's not going to be as effective. And they don't have to disclose anything. And it's, no. You know, it doesn't make any sense for them to do it for tactical reasons for their team. So they're not going to. So we'll never know. We won't know until he plays and we see if he's as effective or not. But you're right, he would be more effective in that kind of game. But I think I think with Petway and with the other guys, you know, give him a few Cam Martin and whoever else a few carries behind him, I think we can, you know, keep Arkansas's offense off the field and really push their defense around and control the game that way. And that would really open it up for Sean and the receivers to get the knockout punch.
I think Kerryon will be on the field 3 to 5 plays maximum.
Wow.
What does it say about Cameron Martin that Stanton Truitt is currently our third string running back and maybe second, depending on how healthy he is?
I don't think he is. I think Cam Martin's a second string. I mean, Truitt came in with, you know, JF3, but I think Cam Martin played before that.
Did he? All right. I may have missed him some.
I mean, I don't know. Truitt is effective, though. He's way more effective as a running back than I thought, so I kind of feel like I want to see him get some carries. I mean, if Kerryon's not playing, I don't have any problem giving that guy some carries.
Yeah, you know, and the funny thing is he was our starting running back on the first play of the season. Do you remember that?
I do, and I have no comment about that.
Well, yeah, that was very strange. Well, let's see. Anything else about looking ahead to Arkansas? What's your feeling overall? I mean, you say you think we can control the line of scrimmage. We can run the ball on them effectively to some degree. I think we're going to be able to throw the ball on them effectively.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they're going to have a hard time running. I think they're going to have to throw the ball at us. And I think they'll be somewhat effective doing that. I think this is going to be another one of these hard-fought, close Arkansas games, and I think that the main thing they have going for them is Kerryon Johnson. I hope I'm completely wrong about him being hurt, and I think the best thing we have going for us, aside from everything getting better and having a week off, is that the game's being played in Jordan-Hare. Is it at night? Is it 6:30, 6 o'clock, 6:30 ESPN?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent,
yes.
Excellent. I like that. All right. Yeah, the last thing you want is to play Arkansas in Jordan-Hare at 11 o'clock in the morning.
No.
We have too many memories, do we not? Too many memories of Arkansas coming in for like an 11 o'clock game, and 250 yards later, their running back is like in the Heisman talk, you know?
That's it.
Oh, those guys. Oh, Lord.
No, I think the night game angle, and the other part is like, Auburn had 5 home games in a row. That's too many. I think the crowd was kind of burned out, honestly, and kind of, you know, it's too many weeks to do the tailgating thing in a row. and everybody needed a break. So we had an away game and a week off. I think everybody's going to be rested and recharged. And a nice, beautiful October day, we get to tailgate all day and then have a night game against Brett Bielema. I think people are going to be ready to be. And I think everybody has a lot more confidence in this team now. There's not going to be this kind of nervous what's going to happen in the stadium. There's going to be a lot of confidence to like, hey, we can go out here and kick this team's ass. Yeah. And so I think that's going to make the crowd really, really, really strong. And I think they're going to make a big difference. I mean, their quarterback is really good. He's going to make plays. But honestly, I think our defensive line is going to, you know, again, their offensive line is a step back from where it was a year or two ago. And I think our defensive line is going to eat them up, and he's going to be running for his life a lot of the game. And he'll make some plays because he's good, and they have some decent receivers. That Keon Hatcher guy's pretty good.
Yeah.
But I think it's not going to be enough, and I think Auburn's offense, like you're saying, is going to really take over at some point. And I think we're going to win, like, you know, 28-17, something like that.
If we can avoid going to overtime in this game, if we can win by double, we're like a 9-point favorite, which I think is insane. Mm-hmm. But if we could win this game by double digits and do it with Kerryon banged up to some degree, I'm going to feel a lot better about our chances through the second half of the season. I've said already, and we'll obviously much more to come on this later, but I've said already, if we cannot beat Georgia this year, I give up. if this team cannot beat that Georgia team this year, honest to goodness, and in Athens, where we own property, right, over the last 30 years, then, my gosh, what does it take? So, yeah, I think that the fans understand that this is a very pivotal game. This is in some ways, I think, this is the pivotal game of the season, because if you beat Arkansas right now is one of the better teams, not the top two or three or four, honestly, but in the, you know, if you break our schedule into 6-6, they're in the top six, I think.
Yes.
And if we can beat them and our only losses be to top six ranked teams in the country right now, going and we'd be 5-2, I feel pretty darn good moving forward.
That's right.
Whereas if we lose this game, then I feel like we're kind of heading back toward 500 ball.
Mm-hmm.
You're 4-3, and you still got to play Alabama, and you still got to play Ole Miss. So you're like, nah. So I feel like this is really, this is like the rubber match, you know. This is the swing game for our overall season record.
I think that's a good description.
Yeah, I feel that very strongly. And it comes right in the middle of the season, too, where it would be the most effective at that, at pointing us in one direction or another. Okay, let me see if I have a button for...
It's time for listener questions! Dun-dun-dun! On the AU Wishbone Podcast!
We're rocking it old school tonight with our sound effects.
All right, first question comes from Auburn Elvis.
Hey, what? Oh man, do you know that one of the six new sound effects I had installed before everything went to crap was an Auburn Elvis theme intro?
Oh man, that's gonna go to his head.
So Reynolds had one, and I had Auburn Elvis one, and now he won't get to hear it until they fix Skype.
He did send me some tough enough sound, yeah. Music sound clips too we need to use.
I hate it. I can't use anything.
So here's this question, and it's a good one, and it relates to our discussion about the larger SEC. Will the SEC East win more than one game against the SEC West?
Well, you and I have sort of gone back and forth on this a little bit, like on Twitter or whatever this week, that when I first heard that, I thought, well, of course they will. And then we started talking about it. And
like, no.
Dang.
It will be zero.
So Kentucky won't beat Mississippi State?
It's in Kentucky. I think that game's a toss up. That's the one. I think if you want the SEC West to get the clean slate, Florida at Arkansas in November.
Yeah,
is the other one I would say is up there.
Didn't Tennessee beat somebody in the West, or am I crazy?
No, the A&M.
A&M in Alabama. No, okay, all right.
So I mean. that at Florida LSU. Yeah, but now it's at LSU, so I don't think Florida's going to win that game.
Not the way LSU's playing now, man.
No, so I mean, really, it's Auburn at Georgia. You know, us home Vanderbilt, which we're going to beat, and Mississippi State at Kentucky. I don't think the East is winning the other games.
Man, that's crazy.
So it's one. I think it's one or zero for the SEC East win total against the West this year.
And when you got to go down to that level to find the one, you might as well just give up, right? I mean, that's you're scraping bottom. You're really scraping bottom looking for that one win when you're saying, you know, Mississippi State. If it starts with, well, you know, Mississippi State, dot, 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 then you're, you know, just no. Just no. No.
All right. I think I'm catching your cough there. through the microphone, through the internet.
The cat fur is coming through the line.
All right. this is from Pat Ringer. He asked this question. He says, now that the team and the fan base have turned the corner feeling good, are we all thinking the same thing? Give Jeremy Johnson another shot at QB?
Patrick.
And you know what I thought about when he sent us this? I thought about, like, a person is like, there's a person like who can't ride a bike and they always keep falling over, and somebody else is riding a bike and they're riding the bike down the street. So this person runs up to them and knocks them off and tries to mount the bike in while it's riding down the street. And I think that's kind of the analogy I would make in that scene.
Wow.
Dan in North Carolina, cautiously optimistic this weekend, but concerned about Arkansas's offense and Allen. He says, over or under do we allow 25 points?
Yeah, I think we allow – see, this is the thing. This is what's got me concerned is I think they're going to score on us a little bit. I mean, I know our defense is playing really well, but they – I'm concerned about their offense. Their offense is playing better than – you know, I was listening to Barrett Salee this morning, and he admitted, he said, you know, the last two or three weeks, he has been flat saying Arkansas is a fraud. And he apologized this morning and said Arkansas is not a fraud. And I'm thinking, I never thought they were a fraud. I've been very concerned about that offense. And so I think that I feel like we're going to have to find a way to put some points on the board. This is not going to be a low-scoring game, I don't think.
You know what? I got to be honest. They're good, but against our defense, I'm going to say 20. That's as high as they're going.
I'm going to say we win 30-27. We score three touchdowns and kick three field goals and hold them to 3 touchdowns and 2 field goals.
That's fair.
Once again, Daniel Carlson is the difference. And let me tell you, if you ever thought you were going to take for granted having a good kicker, watch that Clemson North Carolina State game.
And watch Georgia. Other teams too. They can't kick, and he is so valuable. And I tweeted out this week, like, if some other team, Mississippi State kind of went after him, that one idiot. Yeah. If some other team, like, seriously went after Daniel Carlson, there would be a bench clearing brawl.
There should be. Absolutely. That's like going up in the stands, find the head coach's wife, and punch her in the face. if you do that, there needs to be a fight. Somebody needs to go to the hospital if that happens. I'd jump in the middle of the melee if I was there. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I had to point out, though, that for a brief shining moment, North Carolina State was not a black hole of football disinterest. I was actually paying attention with great interest. And then they missed that field goal, and then they lost the game, and I said, the great sucking sound of the black hole returned. And I never want to hear from them again. And this sums it up, John. This sums it up. I've been saying for months that North Carolina State, I'm trolling the crap out of them. I've been trolling North Carolina State for months, and they've never responded. I've never gotten a single disagreeing word from anybody. Anybody. They've never responded. They're just kind of like, yeah.
Yeah, you're probably right. All right. Last question is from Killer McCoy, who's at the Killer McCoy Spoon. And he says he had a question about Jay Jacobs. And does he deserve to be on the hot seat for the way he's thrown around some of these coaching contracts and the buyout clauses in them? And I think that's a little bit of a fair question. I mean, obviously, I think if you grade him on his coaching hires, you know, people were back and forth about the Gus win this year and all that. But obviously the Bruce Pearl one has turned out great. The earlier baseball coach was bad, and now he's turned that around. The softball coach is great. But, you know, he's the person who's responsible for the – Jay Jacobs is the one who's responsible for the buyout clauses and all that kind of stuff. And so has he made smart business decisions from that side? I think it's a fair question.
Well, I'll put it this way. The last thing I want to do is blindly defend Jay Jacobs. That's not my point at all. I have no doubt there are other people we could have as our athletic director, including our kicker from the early 90s, that would be at least as good, if not better, than Jay. However, I think Jay's been incredibly unlucky because, just for example, I mean, I think he's done what he thought he had to do to be competitive in the current marketplace of coaches. And I don't fault him for that. I would be much more upset with him if he had failed to put money together for some coaches that were really, really good and got hired away. Now, if he throws a little bit of too much money at coaches that maybe in retrospect a year, two, 3 years later, we think, well, maybe that wasn't such a great idea. I can live with that a lot easier than I can live with the opposite, you know? And the other thing is, he's just been kind of unlucky and kind of snake-bitten away because, hell, after 2013 and the beginning of 2014, I would have thrown any money possible at Gus. Who could have ever predicted 2015? Who could have ever predicted that, right? Nobody saw that coming. So it seemed like a really good idea to lock him up. And if we hadn't and some other team had come along and gotten him, I would have driven down to Auburn and thrown garbage in Jay's house myself in his yard, you know? So it's really easy to look at how things worked out and be Monday morning quarterback on them, you know? But if you think about how it could have been, honestly, I find it a little harder to be that critical. Again, I'm not just defending him blindly. I just feel like if you look at everything in total, I don't give him a clean, you know, an A or anything like that, but I have a hard time giving him an F.
That's fair. I think the thing problem with the buyouts and all that is it locks both sides in.
Yeah.
And it takes away the college's flexibility to make change too, not just the, you know, the coach can't leave, but the college can't make changes either. Sometimes if we needed to do that to get the people that we wanted in place in the marketplace, I understand that. I mean, you see some of these other buyouts like the, you know, Kentucky needs to fire their coach, but they're going to owe him like $15 million or something. So I don't have enough knowledge about, you know, the current coaching contract market to know like how much other people are getting buyouts, or whether Auburn is drastically kind of over leveraged on the buyout side compared to everybody else. I get the sense that we're probably not, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm naive. So,
well, look, people like to point out that we have a lot of former coaches on the payroll. So let me just push this button right here.
Factoid of the week.
Man, it sounds terrible through the little speaker now. Here's your factoid of the week. Alabama had like 6 head coaches in 10 years. I'm done. Thank you. Drop the mic.
I I mean, I would say that I think as a whole, the better run athletic departments around the country are being run by people with more of a business background and not, you know, former players. So I think that's kind of where things are going. You're talking about a multi, $100 million business kind of operation. And, I want some guys in MBAs in there who know really what they're doing. And, when they're dealing with these contracts and dealing with the multimedia side of it too, are we leveraging everything we could get out of that side of it? So that's my feeling on the matter.
I think that's good. All right. Let's see. There were a couple of news items. There was one that I just saw come across the transom a little while ago that kind of got my attention. We all know that Pat Dye does some strange things from time to time. I don't know if you saw this. Pat Dye is currently being sued for false imprisonment.
Who did he imprison?
All right. Here's what happened. He had driven over to Auburn for lunch, and after lunch, he's driving his Tahoe back to Notasilga or Lochipoca or wherever the heck he lives, right? And he fell asleep at the wheel.
A heavy lunch.
it happens. He fell asleep, drove over in the other lane, and hit some 66-year-old guy.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy seemed fine until he found out it was Pat Dye. And then suddenly, of course, he's got every malady known to mankind. He's in traction in the emergency room. But the story goes that the police checked them both out, didn't see any reason to think that they had been drinking or anything like that, either one of them, and sent them about their business. And Dye gave the other guy a ride home. Well, now the other guy is claiming that Dye and his lawyer or buddy or something took him to Dye's house and kept him there against his will for a while before taking him home. So he's suing for not only damages and having his life ruined by Pat Dye hitting him while he was asleep, but also for basically kidnapping. I've got to believe that Pat Dye's lost pants and wallet and car keys figure into this somehow, right?
Like maybe this is the guy that found him.
Maybe it is. Something, yeah, there's something going on there. There's just, we need to know what the heck's going on here. I don't know. I don't know what's going on with that. But anyway, I just thought that was too weird and good of a story that I had to share. All right. So our last couple of things here, and we'll wrap this show up. We're going to do our trip around the SEC. But first, you had made a good point about kind of looking ahead. I mean, Auburn in the national rankings, you had a couple of things about that you want to talk about. What do you see as far as how Auburn fits into the rankings? Because I've been watching this with very keen interest, too. I've been annoyed that the coaches poll. Have you seen this? The coaches mm-hmm. poll 2 weeks in a row have us behind LSU.
The humid voting polls, like I'm not losing any sleep about them.
It's absurd.
I know it's absurd, but I mean, and you joked about Ole Miss, and they're ranked in one of those polls.
Oh, yeah. 3-3. They're the best 3-3 team in the country.
They're the first 3-3 team to be ranked in like 10 years.
Gotta be.
But at the same time, I mean, look at who they're three. You know, they lost to Arkansas. The other two losses are Alabama and Florida State. So,
Florida State's no plum these days. Hey, let me just tell you.
They're not terrible, but. In terms of Auburn in the rankings, I mean, I'm not getting hung up on the voting thing because I think with the schedule we have, if we keep winning, that'll come, and the teams ahead of us are going to start dropping off. The interesting thing to me is I want to talk about two things. I want to talk about Auburn the computer rankings, but I also want to talk about kind of my view of the SEC and kind of where everybody fits. I mean, to me, like Alabama's the best team. Below them, you could have a tier with like A&M.
John, when Alabama's the best team, I have many tiers.
I know. and I didn't say they were invincible or anything because they're not. But They're the. It's. I mean,
they're
they
played the best right now. Yeah.
Right. So below them, you'd have a tier with probably like
A&M.
Before this weekend, I probably would have put Ole Miss in that tier.
Probably Tennessee.
And then I'd probably have a larger tier with like LSU, us, Arkansas, Florida.
Yeah.
Is
Georgia in that tier? It depends on the week, doesn't it?
No. There's another tier below that where I would put Mississippi State, Georgia, Vanderbilt, South Carolina, and then like Kentucky is, and Missouri are kind of in a tier at the bottom.
They are. I'm glad that Missouri finally found their level in the SEC. It was kind of weird that they came in the SEC, stunk it up for a year, and then suddenly they had those 2 years where they acted like they knew what they were doing, and then they played SEC football in Columbia, Missouri. And I just kept thinking, this can't be right. This is an anomaly. This cannot be right. And I'm glad that the last year or so, Missouri's gotten back to playing, you know, Missouri football like God intended it. That's just it's a relief on me. We don't need another team coming in acting like, you know, it's bad enough that A&M is halfway decent half the time. We don't need Missouri coming in acting like they're all that. That's just against nature and nature's God.
That's good. And I want to echo your comments about Georgia earlier. I've watched Georgia multiple times this year, and I don't say this about other teams, but I'm going to say this.
Yeah.
Auburn is going to beat Georgia in 2016. You can write it down. You can lock it up. Whatever you want to do, this is it. Okay? They're not that good.
It's our lock of the year. I'm going to hate it when we jinx them. I'm going to hate it.
And I'm going to get all kinds of crap about jinxing them, but I've watched Georgia a lot this year. I'm sorry, I'm clicking this pin because I'm unhappy about Georgia, but they're playing a freshman quarterback. Nick Chubb is hurt. They're not that good on the offensive or defensive line, and they don't have a kicker. Okay, yes, it's on the road in Athens, but they're not going to line up and beat us by running the ball right at us 30 times, and their defense is good. I mean, their defense did a good job this past weekend, but Vanderbilt's offense is awful. It's terrible.
Yep.
So, you know, Auburn is going to, you know, go over there and score some points, and we're going to shut Georgia down. So I'm not – I mean, 2 years from now, Easton will probably be the MVP of the freaking conference, and he'll tear us all apart, and he'll go to the NFL. But that's not now, and none of their receivers scare me at all.
You'll recall we did a column called Auburn, Georgia, the Past is Prologue, and pointed out that Auburn went over to Clark County – and won in 1983, 1985, 1987, 1989, 1993, 1995, 1997, 1999, 2001, 2005, okay? So our streak ended. I believe the last two times we beat Georgia was in Jordan-Hare. The last time we won in Athens, of course, it's gotten all screwed up with them changing the schedule around. But
the last time we won was that, the 2005, the
Brandon Cox,
long pass play fumble at the end zone.
Oh, that couldn't have worked out any better. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's my point is, A, we have a lot of history winning in that stadium more often than not in the last 30 years, by far. And number two, it's time for us to reestablish that.
Mm-hmm. At Georgia's defensive and offensive line, Mississippi State level. That's what I'm telling you. They have a couple good players on their defensive line, but I am not scared.
Well, Sony Michel and Nick Chubb are not Mississippi State level. They're genuine. No,
but again, fourth. Did you watch that? You weren't there to watch that. Vanderbilt, you know, stuff them, and it came to the end of that game. Oh. Georgia had the ball, you know, with about minutes ago, whatever, at the 25-yard line. It was fourth and one, and they put Nick Chubb behind the quarterback, and then they put that little bitty receiver behind Chubb, and they gave the ball to the receiver on fourth and one, and Vanderbilt crushed him, and Chubb didn't block anybody, and just. It was a terrible call, and Kirby Smart is going to hear about that forever.
I heard it on TuneIn Radio as I was driving back from St. Louis, and the Georgia announcer was so funny. He's like, there's the pitch. He's got it wide open in front of me. Oh, no. a man came out of nowhere, and I don't think he made it.
There was three Vanderbilt guys standing there waiting on that play, and Chubb didn't block any of them.
He kept saying he came out of nowhere, and it reminded me of Pat Dye's single worst coaching decision he ever made, pretty much, other than saying, hey, Eric Ramsey, would you like a scholarship? that's probably his worst coaching decision, but other than that... remember when we were up against Alabama in 1984 and we were on the goal line, fourth down, and we got Bo Jackson in the game and we give the ball to somebody else and Bo is a blocking back? That's right up there, isn't it?
It was very similar to that. And the honeymoon for Kirby Smart is over. But anyhow, I detoured way off our discussion about ranking with Auburn just to go in the Georgia thing. But
that's all right. It's always a Georgia rant from you especially is always welcome on this program.
I grew up in Atlanta and half my high school went to Georgia. I'm allowed to fuss about it.
You have like what we talk about, the United States with Great Britain. There's the special relationship, right? I have a special relationship with Alabama, and you have a special relationship with Georgia, and I like to emphasize those things because we have personal gut-level, you know, lifelong impacts and encounters with that stuff. So that's good that we can share it.
So... The one that we were talking about, the human poll voters and how Auburn is getting ranked, it's interesting because all of the computer systems that rank college football teams love this Auburn team. And they actually like them so much it scares me a little bit. Because it does, because Auburn is ranked between like 7th and 12th in the country by every single computerized ranking system.
Why is that?
Because human beings look at games and go, man, Auburn didn't look that good,
right?
You know, against Clemson. And so they've kind of made up their mind. You know what I'm saying?
That was my thing. I have my theories, too. But I want to see what you think. Yeah.
And, like, for example, the system, the ranking system that I look at the most is the you know, Bill Connolly does one called S&P, and then a guy named Brian Fremo does one called F+, and they put them together and do one on a website called Football Outsiders. It's kind of their composite rankings, and they do it for college football. And their rankings don't care about who won the game, okay? They look at the result. One of the systems looks at it drive by drive, and one of them looks at it play by play. And it's how well did you do given – what down and distance it was and where you were in the field and who you were playing. And Auburn has gotten better and better and better. And so these are really measuring like efficiency and explosiveness and those kind of things. So they're really measuring like on an absolute level how well you are playing football on offensive defense. And Auburn has gotten better and better and better, and so our performances against LSU, Louisiana Monroe, and Mississippi State were all great. They were all really, really, really good. So, we're getting credit. We didn't play particularly well against Clemson, but we get some credit for being in the game with them. You know what I'm saying? Right. And the same thing with A&M. That was our worst game of the year. But I think all these systems look at, number one, that we've played very tough teams and played them well, and also that in the last three games especially, Auburn has been really, really good on both sides of the ball. They're really moving the ball well and playing well on defense and stopping the other team, you know, stop on a drive-by-drive basis and a play-by-play basis, having success against the other team. And you really look back and say, you know, we had all those red zone screw-ups against LSU. If we hadn't, we'd beat them by 20 points.
Sure.
And I think then the human perception would be a little bit different now. I think the ending of that LSU game being so screwy also kind of colors people, because some people are like, well, that could have been a win or a loss. So they look at our record with that lens, I guess. But all the computer systems just look at how well is Auburn playing and how efficient and effective are they being when they play, based on the relative of the opponent. The other thing you see is like the two games Auburn's played against teams that should have dominated this year, it dominated against Arkansas State and Louisiana Monroe. And in years past, you know, certainly last year, but in other years, recent years, Auburn has kind of screwed around with those teams. And we haven't put the hammer down on them. And this year we really have. And I think you saw against Mississippi State, you know, Auburn play at a really high level. Now, what worries me about this? I mean, I think Auburn is really good. I think Auburn is a legitimate top 20 team. I think, you know, we're probably going to lose to Alabama. But other than that, you know, maybe we lose to Ole Miss because it's on the road and we end up 8-4. And I would be very happy with that at this point. I mean, I'm not happy about losing Alabama. But at the same time, like, if we play at this level and we get a little bit better, and the team, you know, is playing hard all the way through the season, we go 8-4 and we go to a good bowl game, I'll be very happy with this season. Because the schedule was insanely hard, yeah. And I think this team got better. I mean, it's clear. But, you know, here's the question. When you watch this team, like, what is this team's maximum potential?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, this team, I don't think, has the same – you know, it clearly doesn't have the same ceiling as, like, the 2013 team.
No.
I mean, there's only so good they can get, especially at offense. I mean, I think the defense can get, you know, better with the talent they have. But offensively, like – with the guys we have at running back, and with the guy, you know, with the offensive line that we have, I think the passing game clearly can go up a notch or two and make us really, really dangerous against just anybody we would play in the country. And I think, you know, Auburn on our best day, if you look at the national picture, we can start talking about that now. I mean, if you take that group of like the top five or six teams, you know, like Alabama, Michigan, Ohio State, Clemson and Washington, Louisville, you take them off the board. Mm-hmm. I would take it on a neutral field right now. I'd feel pretty good about Auburn against anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not guaranteeing we would win, but I think we're certainly not going to get overmatched by anybody. I didn't think we'd be a good game.
I think that human beings look at it and say, okay, this is that team that went 7-6 last year. Gus Malzahn's on the hot seat. They looked like they didn't know what they were doing on offense against Clemson. They lost by double digits at home to Texas A&M, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to rank them like 24th, 23rd, right? And that's just because they played well the last couple of weeks. If you look at it, if you take all the names and everything off and you just say, what happened? Okay, here's a team that took Clemson to the last play. Here's a team that has scored lots of points on teams that are not as good as them. Here's a team that, you know, was within two scores of Texas A&M, who's turned out to be really, really good.
Well, and it was within a score of them late when that guy broke the long run. Yeah, I think the defense was kind of wiped out by that point though, because the offense wouldn't do anything.
And a team that blew doors on the road at Mississippi State and that beat LSU, who's looking really good right now. If you don't know what team you're talking about, you just say Team X did all those things. Yeah, you might want to rank them up in the top 12, 13, you know, right now. And if we beat Arkansas, I think we're a top 15 team for sure, don't you?
Yes, I do. And I think you're right. It's the human perception. Two things. One, what you said about the beginning of the year and how we looked against Clemson. And also, I think some of it is writers ranked Auburn really high last year, and then we crashed and burned. And so they're hesitant to go back there.
That always happens.
And they're like Auburn
– And look, and I don't want to let this slide. Remember, there has probably never been, in my memory, you tell me if this is wrong, I cannot remember a time where, even though we only lost by one score, less than one score, after the Clemson game, I can't remember any time where the coaching staff was getting so much criticism everywhere is after the Clemson game. We could have won that Clemson game and they'd been gotten ungodly criticism. But I mean, even after we lost to A&M, I wasn't hearing it quite as much as after Clemson. After that Clemson game, I wanted to go hide in a hole in the ground.
You know, I mean,
you remember that?
Yes, I do, because they deserved it on some level. Oh, yeah. I mean, the offensive staff.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Yeah.
So you're right. I think that's part of it too. Like the team can't be that good if the fans are unhappy with the coach that much during the course of the same season. I think that's a narrative that people can't get straight in their heads. So, but I think the one thing I would take away from this is that Auburn fans should be encouraged because the computers kind of see through all that bias and they see that Auburn is a good, solid team. And I'm not saying, you know, that we're going to win the SEC or anything, but I'm also telling you that this is not some kind of mirage paper mache thing and we're going to fall apart, from here on. So
you kind of sounded like Les Miles just now. This team is a good, solid team. These boys are out there fighting. Let me tell you, you should go and kiss every one of them on the mouth. If you're a girl. Because this is a good, solid team. That's very Les Miles sounding of you just then.
The last thing I want to say is, I mean, I love the defense, and I love our defensive line. It makes me very happy every week. And the defense is real. Like, our defense is legitimately, one of the top 10 or 12 in the country. And no one is going to blow us out of the stadium or off the field with that defense back there. So,
last segment, bring this show in for a landing.
Trip around the
FTC. We talked a little bit about these games already from the past. You want to do the past ones first, then we'll get to the new ones?
I put them in the wrong order. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Mississippi State disappointed us. I couldn't stay up late to watch that game. I had to go to bed at halftime, so I didn't know what happened. The Vanderbilt game we already talked about. Good Lord. Bama, just Tennessee. I was looking at the score on our little satellite radio thing on my wife's car as she was driving us home from somewhere, and as we were driving, that number just kept ringing up. And by the time we got home, I'm like, I don't even want to turn it on.
Yeah.
So
I mean, Alabama crushed them. Alabama ran for like 400 yards and held Tennessee 32. That's all I need to know. And Alabama's defense scored, more points than Tennessee did.
Good gosh. Florida rolled over Missouri. Is that more about Florida or more about Missouri?
I mean, it's more about Florida. Florida's really good on defense, and Missouri did not very good at anything. So,
we talked about the Ole Miss Arkansas game. That was a classic. That was a fun game to watch.
It was a fun game.
It held my attention. And of course, LSU rolled on the Golden Eagles. Let's see. Coming up this week, UMass continues their having joined the SEC.
Expansion team.
Yeah. We want that Boston TV market.
Boston,
man.
Media market.
Holy cow. UMass, I mean, they play Florida. They play South Carolina. They play Mississippi State. I mean, let's see. Wait, so is Florida? Oh, yeah. Okay. So apparently they think they're an East team mostly, right? Mississippi State's like their Western crossover opponent.
That's good. I like it.
Okay. UMass played everybody tough, though. I mean, South Carolina better watch out.
Mm-hmm.
Texas A&M at Alabama. Now, that's the marquee matchup. That's got to be the 2:30 CBS game, right?
It is.
The Vern farewell tour.
A&M had a week off.
I everybody thinks Alabama's going to roll here. I think A&M's going to give them a game at least for three quarters.
I think A&M's going to give them a much better game than Tennessee did. I mean, I don't know if they're going to win, but I think it's going to be a competitive game.
With those receivers, A&M can do some things.
Well, but the big stealth thing that nobody notices is since Mazzoni has gone there, they're a great running team.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
I mean, they have real balance, and you can't just line up and think they're going to throw the ball. I'm going to look and
well, they were the best running team in the SEC a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, they still are. Ahead of Alabama.
Yeah. So, man, the funny thing is we actually, if you play this game, and I tell you, there are lots of Auburn people who suddenly think they're trying to scheme how to get us into the playoffs. Or at least into Atlanta.
Easy.
I know it. I'm thinking it's probably the same ones that wanted to fire Gus and hire Petrino or what's his name from Baylor. But now they're flipped their lids and they're trying to figure out how to scheme us into Atlanta. If you play that game, then we need Alabama to win this game. Because then we would beat. We would need A&M to lose one more game. We beat Alabama, we go.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing, though. There ain't no way I'm cheering for Alabama against Texas A&M.
No, dude.
Remember, John. If somebody asked me would I choose to root for Alabama, my reply is always, oh, yeah. Okay, so no, that ain't happening.
That's it exactly. If they played the Soviets, I'm getting a hammered swastika.
Comrade, absolutely.
Hammer sickle.
Comrade.
That's it. So, Duh. Yeah, we'll be cheering Aggies. Middle Tennessee and Missouri, Tennessee State at Vandy. So the only other games are Mississippi State at Kentucky, which is the East one. They should highlight that game.
This is the East Bowl. This is the SEC East Bowl. This is the one that Kentucky has circled on their schedule.
Could save that coach's job, maybe. And then Ole Miss at LSU
Hold it. What was that last one?
Ole Miss at LSU.
My cold, dead hands.
We're locking up LSU.
Really?
I think that Ole Miss is going to have a losing record. We talked about this in the preseason, remember? I said that it's very possible that Tennessee and Ole Miss, I know I said Tennessee, but I think we're talking about Ole Miss too, they both could have losing records.
In October,
and then recover. Now, Tennessee always plays the Sisters of the Poor in November and December. We know this. So Tennessee's done losing. They're going to win out the rest of the way. But Ole Miss, man, they better watch out. I just feel like they're down. They're 3-3 with a good team, and LSU is peaking right now. They've got WWE himself. How is Ed Orgeron not a veteran of the WWE? How is he never like the Cajun? You know?
He runs the schedule and gets hired as the permanent LSU coach because he's just so entertaining.
That would be so awesome. He'd come out in the ring in black trunks with a big fleur-de-lis in gold on the side of it. Right? And he spouts out something that nobody understands, and then he drops like the jambalaya elbow on you. The Crawdad Crusher. How is he never a wrestler?
I think
he misses calling.
I think he's going to have him fired up, and you know he needs to have LSU play well to earn a shot to get this job, and I think he's going to do it. I think Ole Miss is really good. I think on a neutral field, I'd probably pick them, but coming off that loss last week.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think Orgeron is going to have LSU, you know.
That's what I'm saying.
Really fired up. And it's the late night game at Baton Rouge.
Yep. The magic is back.
But it's also like it's a long time to drink when they play at 9 o'clock Eastern down there, 8 Central. So.
Guaranteed. Woo. That is. Whew. All right. Well, we're going to lock up LSU and we'll see what happens. I've got to point out. Did you have any? We always got to give our update on the Southern Fighting. The Southern Fighting this week. This week the Southern Fighting are playing North Carolina AT&T. North Carolina AT&T is a school. They got lots of money. They got great infrastructure, but terrible customer service. So good luck to the Southern Fighting. Bring home the victory. Pay the bills on AT&T. Let's see, a couple of other things. If you like the open wheel racing, John and I are very excited, and by John and I mean I are very excited that tomorrow we're going to be doing our first, and we'll probably be doing these daily going forward, right?
First and last.
We're going to be doing our Formula One show. Very excited about this. So I'm trying to decide still what feed to put it through. I don't know whether to put it through the Wishbone feed on account of sports or whether to put it through the White Rocket feed, which is general purpose, but is not really sports oriented. So I may put it through both, and if you don't like it, just delete it or ignore it. But it may come through one or the other or both. But I'll certainly make that apparent through Twitter and Facebook and everything else. And then, like I say, I might just put it through both feeds, and people can treat it thus if they want. But what we're going to do, we're going to look at the season so far. There's four races left to go. It's really been a very exciting season. It's my first season watching it, and so you're going to get the perspective of somebody that's just now learning about it all, getting into it all, which I think should be kind of fun for some of you that are already experts, maybe just to kind of get a sense of what new fans are thinking about it. And then we'll see John's perspective, which is like, you know, we'll see if I can get him interested in it, right? We'll see if I can make it. If I can present it in such a way that it's compelling at all. So there's four races left to go in the season. They were off this past weekend because they're traveling over from Asia. They had several races in Asia. They're coming over to North America. They're going to be in Texas at Austin. My daughter really wanted to go. We'll try to go next year maybe. And the points championship, man, is down to the line between the two Mercedes drivers. So we'll have a good time talking about that tomorrow on the Formula One White Rocket Formula One show. Otherwise, don't forget to check out Decades of Dominance and Season of Our Dreams. And of course, Lorendo. I hadn't really gotten a chance to mention it, tonight, but, you know, like always, we gotta point out that, if you haven't
the trips to Lorendo,
yeah,
a excellent Christmas gift for the Auburn fan in your life.
It's a good time to start thinking about that now. It's after the midpoint of October. Go ahead and get a couple of copies of Lorendo. In fact, I'm sure there's plenty of time right now. You could get a copy and get it to Mr. Ringer to sign for somebody and send it back out. So if you're interested in such a thing, just drop us an email at auwishbone@gmail.com or contact us on Twitter, and we can hook you up with like a signed copy probably that way. Otherwise, do check it out. So I think that's most everything for tonight. What do you think, John? We made it through it with minimal sound effects.
Smoke weed every day.
It was all worth it just for that. Now, you promised to make car noises for the show tomorrow night. Have you been practicing? Excellent. This should be a fantastic show. All right. All right. Well, we've had a good wacky time tonight. I hope you guys have enjoyed it. And we're going to wrap things. Any last thoughts about Auburn football before we turn the page to auto racing tomorrow night?
Just, you know, go get some good pork belly barbecue bacon for this weekend.
Oh, it is definitely barbecue week. I'm not sure yet if it's going to be Hicks or what, but we got Hicks. We got the Beast. We got the Righteous Pig, which is our logo on Facebook. We got a lot of good barbecue. We got 17th Street. We got a lot of good choices around here, but it's definitely a pulled pork weekend coming up this weekend. All right, John, let's wrap up for tonight. Our time is up, and we thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
All right, I hope to heck that recorded.